Okay, Mike, thanks for on.
Okay, well, it's 6:03 here Thursday night, October 21st, for our October Administrative Control Board meeting here at the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation Facility in the training room. So, Gary, thank you, and thank Mike for having us over. Do we have any public input tonight? Doesn't sound like it.
Chris, do you see any public numbers?
Just double checking. No.
Okay, so that's item one on our agenda. Second one is executive session. Do we need to go in?
We do. We need to go in for two reasons, for personnel as well as legal. So we'll let Steve and when Gary's done excuse themselves and we can get into it.
Okay, so we'll need a motion and a second.
Second. Motion to move into executive session.
That's
sorry.
Could we do that next time again?
Yeah.
That's close.
So that was Tim. Yeah, that was a motion by Ian, second by Tim.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So that was unanimous. Okay, now we're back in open session.
Yep, do we have the folks that are calling in? Can you hear us okay?
Yep.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, we had a motion by Ian and a second by Karen to come out of executive session.
So, we're on to our third item on the agenda. It's their consent items. We've got the September minutes, the September check register. I've got my eyes on this Toyota Tundra pickup here a little bit. and maybe some purchase orders. So, first of all, we'll start with the minutes. Some people just go around the table. Ian, any comment on the minutes?
No, not minutes.
Tim?
No.
Karen?
Nothing on the minutes.
Okay, those sound good. How about the check register, Ian?
Yeah, I had a couple. One's related to, I think, to Scott's minutes. Looked like there was $1,000 payment to USU Research for wildfire mitigation. That's our contribution into that collective effort.
So the total contracted amount is $12,000 with Utah State to perform field verification of things like some of the stream channel bisections, sediment sizes in the stream channel to understand movement of that, as well as fuels field verification. There's four parties contributing to that: Mountain Regional, Weber Basin, Summit Water, and Park City, $3,000 each. So we're the...
There'll be a couple more payments.
Yeah, so you're going to see those checks through the full 12K, and then Steve's going to invoice out to the other parties.
So we're running it. So we'll do the full 12. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. 12 at 1,000.
Pardon?
12 of them at 1,000 will get filled.
Yep.
Well, just say the invoices will be of varying, you know, amounts. You'll see total invoices of up to $12,000, and then we will invoice Park City, Weber Basin, and Summit Water for
reading. Well, thanks for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Get the model calibrated.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really important work. So, okay, and then the Badger meters, we bought another batch of them. Is that because of new customers coming in? Because we are pretty caught up at this point, right?
Yeah, as far as Badger meter changeouts, we've got like 30 census old meters still kind of holdouts. The rest is just to supply all the new demand.
Okay.
Right on. And then this might relate to Sam's notes a little bit, but the Newman construction on Kilby Road, so we paid the 32-something K for work to date. It looked like there was a minor change order, but it's pretty much on schedule and everything's going per the original scope.
Yes. Sam, do you want to chime in?
Was that a correct indication of it? Was it progress to date or was it a progress payment?
Is this the first time we've paid him?
It's the first payment we've made is the check here. And we haven't made any payments so far in October either.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the next payment will likely be the final payment. We're issuing substantial completion and put together a punch list today. And overall, we're really happy with Newman's work. The project went really well, and yeah, I think we'll have a good end product and trouble-free water line, hopefully, for the district. So, yeah, it went really well.
Because they were pretty low. They were very low bid, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were the lowest bid.
Quite a bit lower.
It's hard to see why it's low these days, you know, on a price per foot. I mean, it was 8-inch water line somewhere in the $80 per foot range, $88 or $89, I believe, per foot. So still feels expensive to me, but in the current market, I think it was pretty good price.
Well, the other two bids were outrageous. So.
Much higher.
Yeah,
we were,
they were the low
concern was compared to everybody else.
Right. And then whose drain line was it that we ran into, the only mod to the contract?
It's not clear. Maybe Brian can chime in too, but I was thinking maybe it's a legacy from a UDOT project in the past that looks like some sort of pseudo French drain. It was a perforated style pipe that was causing some issues for us. So we chased it back and repaired it, you know, protect our project and any unknowns in the future. But yeah, we're not totally clear on who owns the drain line.
Okay, well, minor impact.
I think front door was a live way.
Yeah. Cool. All right. And then there was a couple of purchases for the Silver Creek well. Just any discussion on that?
Sam, do you have any comments on that? I'm assuming it's mechanical related to just getting things finished up in the pump station.
We had a check to
We just had two rental items with getting the Silver Creek well online, and got those all taken care of over the summer. So as far as contractor invoices and any pumping mechanical type invoices coming through, I think we caught the last of them in this last month. So I think we're just about there on the finance side.
Cool. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that's it for me.
There was a payment for a drug test in there. Was there an accident of some sort?
No, just two random drug tests as part of our licensing.
And I just wanted the Les Olson thing for the DocuWare and the cloud is almost like $10,000. Is that like a once a year thing?
Annual. Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
Thanks, Tim. Karen?
There was a charge for $4,558 to a golf course pump repair at Promontory. And was it our pump or was it their pump?
So we have pumps that supply the garden pond with irrigation water that are in the galley of the treatment plant.
Uh-huh.
I believe that one of those pumps needed to be repaired. So Promontory pays for those repairs, I think. Do you invoice them directly or how do you do that
stuff? It would become part of the rate that they pay next year. So whatever the charge is next year calculated for their irrigation.
So we manage the maintenance of those pumps.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah. And then it looked like we had a couple of asphalt repairs, one for $2,300 and one for $3,900.
Probably related to the two mainline breaks, Brian, that you had in your report. Is that correct, or was it other repairs?
Yeah, most likely, and one of them might have been for the redo of the Red Pine Crossing.
Yeah, and one of those went to community water because it was to redo the Red Pine Crossing.
Yep.
So it's part of their loan now.
Okay. And then I've never seen a bill for Davis and Weber Canal shares.
I figured that one might come up.
Yeah, so I just wondered what that was.
That's a long, so that's a legacy bill that we receive every year. I think it's related to the Davis and Weber shares that are tied up with the master agreement. But to be honest with you, I don't know the exact details. I'd have to dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, I just don't feel like I've ever seen, you know, I see the normal ones that we have at the end of the year, and it wasn't like a huge amount, but it was something I hadn't seen.
I looked at that today and thought that might be a question that I should dig into it. So.
Why do we have Davis and Weber?
We do pay their shares.
Yeah,
maybe it isn't always this time or something.
It might be worth something. Never know. Okay, yeah. Is that good?
Can That's I, it.
All right, thank you. So I think we've covered the check register.
Mike, on the issue about the asphalt repairs and stuff, and I think, Brian, this is, unfortunately, I live in Silver Spring, so I'm driving over that little repair job that you did about 2-3 weeks ago. Is the reason that we're not paving that is because we got to go back in it?
Over in, I'm sorry, yeah, over in Silver Spring.
I think we're backed up on the prep side of it, and we hired out the actual paving part, so.
Okay, because.
It's on the list. We're a little backed up on some of those.
Does that present a similar type of hazard as what we had on Bear Hollow? I mean, it's a slower speed type of situation. It's a 25-mile-an-hour road there. And like I said, I drive over it every day or twice a day or something. It's not real clear to me what we're supposed to be doing there. There's a cone out there, and I drive right over the dirt, and it seems to be fine. Are we supposed to be driving around that with the cone, or is the cone
it's
just saying?
Much of a traffic control plan.
Well,
it's drivable. I think it's drivable. I think it's just kind of there for a little bit of a warning.
But is the reason that we're not doing it is just a backup on the asphalt contractor?
Yes, and, we typically prep it ourselves. So we go back and dig all the dirt out. We have to get a compaction test. So given the guy's schedules, some of those are not exactly a turnaround item.
Yeah, I was just raising this is that because I don't know about other people's neighborhood, but they get these kids now on these electric bikes that got like 3 of them on there, and they're just like full-on electric motorcycles. And those guys are going like 30 miles an hour along there, but they probably know that's there, so it's not going to be a big issue. I was just curious about whether you were going to go back into that again or if it was just a delay because of the backlog of asphalt and stuff. Small job like that.
Yeah, we'll definitely be back to fix it.
Okay.
Risk management. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. That's timely. Okay, I think we're through the check register. Item C is an approval. We're considering approving auctioning the 2009 Toyota Tundra off.
Yeah.
And well, that seems fine. I don't think there's any. We don't need really a motion. We could.
I think we do.
Yeah, we need a motion to approve that.
But isn't it going to be covered in the consent agenda?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Steve, do you want to just give it a super quick overview?
The low bid will be $9,200. That's basically low book, fair price, minus what the auction fee would charge us. Everybody will be alerted probably Monday. We'll give it a 2-week run this time. I'm guessing there'll be quite a bit of interest.
How many miles is on it?
About 136,000 miles on it right now. Just not needed in the fleet, and we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later in the capital budget planning, but we're trying to get a better process in place to when we're going to trade those out and things like that. So,
Okay, thank you. All right, do we have any purchase orders?
No purchase orders tonight.
Okay, I think we're ready for a motion on the consent agenda, please.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
And that's Tim and Karen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. And we're on to item 4. Mr. Steve Anderson has the floor on the revenue side of the budget tonight?
Well, we did kind of a revenue prep the other week. This is where tonight we're going to hit. Let me just do a quick update on the financial results through September. This would be real brief.
Oh, that's your first one. I'm sorry. I jumped ahead.
No, that's okay. So we are about $4 million over budget right now. As you can see, it's about 3.6 due to the revenue from impact fees and about $360,000 savings on expense side.
But theoretically, those have a cost against them. It's just
just delayed for a few years till we can use the money to spend on a project.
Yeah. To confirm better than budget, right?
Yeah.
Budget over budget, better than budget.
Then the other part, that kind of September sales were lower than budget, as you may have guessed, kind of like August. Usage was down. Let me get down here to usage. 18% over the last 4 years. You can see we only used 279 acre feet, our own customers, this September. We haven't been that low in our 4 or 5 year history. So yeah. When the rain came in August, people adjusted their sprinklers. They apparently did not turn them back on. So that was, so the usage was low. And then, let's see if I can just go to the graph real quick.
Did the other entities sort of mirror that at all? Did we?
You know, I don't know how other entities did.
I'd have to reach out to Clint. I know in general they had a nice decrease in their usage with all the conservation messaging, and I would just add that point that I think the conservation messaging had a play in those reductions as well.
Yeah, I think that's what prompted them to originally change their sprinkler time.
That's good.
So there was just a piece on the radio this afternoon that St. George was down 8% this year with, I can't remember how many, actually I think it was like 1,000 new connections, and they are still down 8%.
Well,
so
that's good.
I think it's a statewide trend.
But is there any chance that there's an offset going on here that we maybe can't pick up, maybe we can, through the Badger meters maybe, that is there a possibility that we had houses here that previously were not being used but were being charged a flat rate, you know, the minimum rate?
Oh, yeah, just paying
their
base.
And now they're being occupied over the last year and actually using water, so there's no increase in revenue, but there's an increase in the usage of water that might offset what we're looking at on the conservation side. Is there any way of tracking to see whether that's actually happening or not?
When we get into the budget, we'll see where usage per culinary connection is down. So
I mean, you take a look at the promontory, for example. I bet you that, I mean, just judging by the number of Range Rovers that are coming down there every day, there's got to be, that, you know, compared to years past, I think there's owners living in houses there that weren't living in houses.
Yeah. There's less vacancy.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the white work trucks. That makes up like nine out of ten.
Because usage is down, so the total usage is down, and we've got more. Your theory would be we've even got more people using it, so conservation is even stronger.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is the conservation could possibly be better than what we're looking at. It's just that we're getting usage where we were getting. Yeah. Weren't seeing that usage in the past, but the revenue was there at a flat rate.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. A lot of the usage that we talked about is outside irrigation. So even if they weren't living there, if they were paying somebody to still water and keep the landscaping up, that would probably account for, you know, 60% of their usage, let's say. So. But yeah, that'd be interesting because to see how many went from paying just a base and a minimum, and all of a sudden somebody's obviously living there.
But even if they're still just paying the base, the usage would be going up and they wouldn't be paying anymore. So we'd be peddling more water but not generating any more revenue.
Well, they'd be paying for the usage, though.
They'd be paying for the usage. So we would generate more revenue.
So there isn't just a flat rate, no matter how much is being used.
No, you get 60. You pay 61.80 for no gallons, and then your first 5,000 get 0 to 5,000. There is a charge. There used to be back in the day. There were some gallons.
So there is a minimum charge, but you're saying the landscaping probably chews through that first 5,000.
Oh yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So you don't get any water with the base. So even that first 1,000 gallons is $1.80. $1.80.
Yeah.
So we'd see it. And to your point, is there a way to track it? We could compare, you know, homes that had no usage for the previous year versus the same home with usage and quantify that.
And I'm only suggesting that you might think of, I mean, it's not the highest priority, but just to see if there was a change, because it might inform you a little bit differently about how things are actually being used. I know you want to know how usage is all the time.
Yeah. Because it's easier to track when they go from standby and no meter to all of a sudden they're a meter. But we don't have we don't have that built into, oh, wow, there's usage here where there historically wasn't, or there's been an uptick in usage here that obviously somebody's occupied.
Just curious.
Okay. You could work on that. All right. So that's kind of just the quick September results. So let's get into the meat of the night.
Any questions on the September results before we move on?
No.
No.
Okay. So our budget presentation, hopefully y'all had a chance to at least kind of skim through the report. There was a little email. Basically, two things changed after, in a few spots after that was sent out. We downgraded our 2021 year-end projection for retail water sales after seeing September's results by $50,000. So we just kind of had to run those through the... Oh, maybe this would have been better in the PowerPoint than the PDF, but... okay. So the timeline, as you recall, tonight we talk about the budget. If there's anything you've seen that you want to change, look at, have us take a second look at. Then you recommend us to give this budget to council. We'll present the budget on November 3rd to council. We give it to them about, kind of like you guys, about the week before, so they can start to review it. Then it goes public from November 3rd until December 1st, when we go back to the council and they formally adopt it as our budget for 2022.
I think you can change the scale on this if you want. Make it a little smaller. Yeah.
You can see it.
Control arrow.
I love that it's big enough for all of us to read, regardless of our age.
All of us.
Okay, thank you.
You probably haven't had cataract surgery yet.
No.
So our kind of our ongoing budget considerations, how our revenue fluctuates, we've seen how...
So for November 3rd, do you want members of the board to attend that preliminary meeting with council?
It's not necessary.
What about the next one in December?
Let's wait and see if there's any changes that are recommended by the council on November 3rd that the board is either not comfortable with or wants to have a further dialogue with the council. We can talk about that in the November board meeting, and you could come to the December, in theory, the adoption meeting for the budget with council.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. So the fluctuating revenue, we saw, if you remember, in 2020, we had high revenue because of water usage. 2021, we had high revenue because of impact fees. So those things are moving target for us. To offset that, we have our stabilization reserves. We're in a good cash position. And tonight, you established the drought reserve fund back in March. Tonight, we're going to authorize the funding of it. And we're asking to move $800,000 from our regionalization reserve to our drought reserve fund. Expenses. We do have several that are fixed. Our debt service is very consistent, about $3.5 million a year. Our Weber Basin lease fees, about $1.7, $1.8. And then power is our other single largest line item. So this presentation ties back to the report that was sent. So there's kind of the over section 3, kind of overview, kind of talking about what's happening. Section 4, where we really, this is the budget for 2022 we're presenting. The section 5 is the debt service budget. This is kind of the 1.25. We do have enough to cover our debt. Section 6, the capital budget. And then section 7, we do have a couple of minor budget amendments because of the retail water shortfall and interest earning shortfall.
But back on that power issue, do we have any evidence that buying into that array of solar panels is, do we know what the bottom line is on that, or is it?
It's going to cost us 3% more to go green. So when that kicks in, our power expense will go up by about 3% in 2023.
Mm-hmm. Is that right here?
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
So no impact on the 2022 budget.
Okay.
And that's sort of driven by the county's policy to participate in that program.
Yes.
Although I heard this morning on the radio that Rocky Mountain is at 80% renewables already.
Really?
Yeah, which I thought was high.
High number.
Yeah.
And they're incentivizing the home battery
packages now if you have solar arrays, which is, that's kind of like leading edge for the United States. There's only a few states that are doing that. It's a pretty aggressive plan to start using homes as part of the grid. So
I'm just wondering if that 80% isn't that they're at 80% of where they plan to be on this year.
I don't know. It was on that whatever that show between 9 and 10 is, the mountain.
That just seemed incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep going here.
Back to kind of earlier talk about consumption. This is per culinary customer, not just residential customers, but anybody we send culinary water to. You can see we have seen a decrease projecting out for the end of the year. Conservation efforts, the rainy August, that has left us a little under budget for retail water sales for 2021.
And for those who are interested, if we look at just the residential category, we'll be closer to a third of an acre foot per customer.
So
the commercial accounts and things bring that up.
So sometimes culinary is confusing to me because then that's just indoor water. Usually it's indoor or outdoor water. And so
combined.
Yeah, culinary for us, most people water their lawns with it.
So then that would just be potable water in general, like to the state.
That might be a better way of explaining it.
Better terminology?
Then culinary is cooking. Right?
Okay. Yeah. I'll make that change before we present
it's
that
to potable.
Council.
Yeah. And it can be used indoors, outdoors, wherever. Yeah.
And to clarify my comment, on a per ERC basis, we're closer to a third of an acre foot.
Not a half.
Correct.
Yeah. So
when you, so then how did you, what's the difference between these?
This is per connection.
Per connection. So your commercial accounts, sorry, restaurants, Triumph.
Over all of the connections.
Yeah. Yes. The planning's done at a half an acre, isn't it?
Yeah, what is an ERC? Like what?
Half an acre.
It's half an acre. So
half an acre.
Okay,
well,
so
the state ranks closer to 8/10.
Yeah, so our 2019 impact fee study, it specified an ERC as a half an acre.
Okay.
I expect that when we do our impact fee study next year, that number will come down.
Yeah. And does that mean we can issue more willingness to serve letters, or does that like?
Yeah, they're not, the impact fee study is not tied to concurrency, but concurrency looks at the same data, looks at it slightly differently. But if we, over time, if our impact fee studies are showing a declining of volume of water per customer, concurrency will be showing the same trends.
So that means we can subscribe
more customers with the water resources that we have.
The planning would never change. You just have to go in after the fact and see what the actual usage is.
The timing is different. We've stretched those projects and sources out farther.
Yeah, that's correct, Mike.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions on this slide? We'll make that change. Thanks. So this is just to kind of show how that retail water sales can fluctuate. The blue year, so our hot, dry years, and the gold years are where we drop below budget. So right now, that's that 50,000 we're projecting will come up short in retail water sales by the end of the year. For 2022, we're projecting 9.52 million. As you can see, for 2021, we budgeted 9.1. We're coming in at 9.05. The increase is due more to the growth and additional base we're going to be getting, because we've kind of reset our model this year because usage patterns definitely changed. So the usage increase will be minimal. It'll basically be the new customers using about the same amount of water as the old customers. There's no usage growth, let's say. But we should be able to add about that 400,000 plus in revenue just because of how many more customers we'll have connected. This does include both standby and connected customers as part of that retail sales, so that helps too. Because as lots get platted and they start to pay standby, that does help this number. So that's why we're still projecting an increase, even though we don't really see a big increase coming in usage.
Where are most of the new platted lots right now in the district?
Promontory, Silver Creek. And thank you for that leading question. On this slide, we're talking about the connections for this coming year.
Yeah.
So this year, we're projecting 360 and about 3.15 million in impact fee revenue. The one thing that's kind of skews this is that 7 connections accounted for 1.15 million. Those were the 6 workforce housing and Ascent Hotel. So it made the impact fee per connection much higher than it normally is because those were such big projects. Yeah. So for next year, we're projecting 290 connections. That comes from about 150 in Silver Creek, about 90 in Promontory, 25 in Discovery, 10 in the Colony, and then kind of down from there. Some in Glenwild, a few in Stagecoach, that kind of thing. So our big growth next year we see coming out of Silver Creek and Promontory. That's how we get to our 290. Now backing out those big ones, and we don't have anything like that in the funnel right now, it brings our average, so even though we're almost as many connections, our impact fees would drop to about 1.6 million. We've kind of had a change of thought or philosophy. We always kind of budgeted this minimum to make sure we weren't becoming too reliant on it as long as we were hitting our ratios. Oh. Scott, you know, coming to some of our conferences and some of the things we're hearing, we thought, no, let's really try to predict this number more accurately.
And the concept was, let's put the effort in to understand what the minimum amount of money or minimum amount of revenue we need to bring in from impact fees to meet ratio. Make sure we're comfortable that we can do that. And if we are, then let's give it our best guess of how many connections we're really going to get. If we come short of that, it's not a big deal because we're still making our ratio. Yeah. We're still in good shape. So we're trying to, you know, I think we all understand that this is, you know, a bit of a dart throw. These projections are very difficult. We're trying to provide a more accurate guess, if you will, to what we think we're going to see.
So right now we're projecting the year-end balance to be 4.9 million in impact fees, which seems high, but with the things we have coming up in the coming years to kind of match this growth we're seeing, we'll go through that real easily.
Yeah.
Kind of just reviewing our 2 major contracts that account for about 50% of our production. Regional water supply, the water we send through Weber Basin to Summit Water Distribution Company. Next year, we take the step back. We go from 1,100 acre feet to 700 acre feet. So we drop from 1.9 million to about 1.2 million in revenue. So about a $700,000 drop there. We actually timed that out really well with our growth, because it would have been hard to meet our growth and continue to deliver the 100 acre feet. Plus financially, when I first got here in 2018 and we did the rate study, Lisa and I, we were like, oh, 2022, that's going to be the year. We're going to have to do another rate increase. But because of the growth, we're going to be able to push that down the road a little bit more, which is nice. So it timed out really well. Down below that, you'll see the next 3 years that we're all set when we did the rate study, so we don't have to have the discussion every year. So you can see next year it's the same amount of acre feet. In 2023, same amount of acre feet, a little bit more because the price goes up a little bit. But
So the amount that we're giving to Summit Water is going to go down by a third.
Yeah.
I'm just curious that how Summit Water, it's not our problem, but
it's Park City's problem.
Park City's going to make up the difference through that one plant that they have now?
So in 2020, I'll think about this. In 2022, I'm trying to think of when Park City's plan to have their Three Kings plant online. Is it 23?
23.
So I think that they are comfortable with being able to make up this difference using their existing sources. When that Three Kings plant comes online, in theory, they should have some additional capacity to continue to provide the water that is coming off of our schedule. To what extent, we don't know.
And Park City's rates haven't changed.
Which rates?
Their wholesale water rate to Summit.
Not to my knowledge.
So they'll be paying more than what they were paying.
Yes, they will.
Yes.
If they still need the 400 acre fee.
Yep.
Well, they're committed.
Yeah, they're obligated.
Once it's on the schedule, yep, they have to pay for it.
Okay. Thank you.
The other major contract is basically our shared facility down at Lost Canyon, where Park City pays, you know, 43.9% of the costs. We only charge them basically to wheel the water over and these shared costs. So next year they're going to take about the same 2,300 acre feet. We reached out to them, asked them, you're taking about this much this year. How much do you plan on next year? Is it going to be 29 more? They said more like the same as this year. So just over 2,300. The reason the cost will go up is because the expenses are going up. We're adding one person to our distribution, our Lost Canyon, our transmission team. And then also some power costs are a little bit higher. So that's really why it goes up. It's not a make money proposition really for us. So those are the two major water contracts. So kind of keep in the back of your mind that in 2022, we're dropping 400 acre feet off. So this is why 2020 was quite hot. So we had production sales of almost 6,500 acre feet. This year it's dropping. Next year, what really drops is Summit Water, the 400 acre feet. So that comes off. We're putting MRW customer usage back to not quite as low as this year, and then with the growth, Promontory Golf stays pretty consistent what we expect from them, the Park City Wheeling. So those are the components. The bottom is our customers. The section in the middle is Promontory Golf. The gray is Park City Wheeling. And the top is Summit Water. So that's how we get to how much water we have to get out to people.
Park City Wheeling's big.
Yeah.
It's as big as our customer base. That's a really good
They take 38.3% of our water. Now, granted, it's raw water. We don't have to do anything to. We just kind of send it off to them. But yeah, but it is 38% of our water.
Is there an assumption in here on Pine Meadows at all?
We have left Pine Meadows off of, we left it off our bond stuff, and we've left it off of here because it's just too much of an unknown.
Yep. We're still in due diligence.
Yeah. It could come through, it could fail, it could come through at the beginning of 2023.
Well, is the idea that it's going to be a zero-sum issue with regards to cost to us?
I mean, from a business model perspective, yes, right? I mean, the idea is right, we're generating the revenue we need to serve the customers.
So anything that we toss on top of that will get paid one way or another through those customers? Or
they would be kind of like community water customers, and probably a lot of base and not a lot of usage. So yeah, on a purely financial view, Pine Meadows annexation may make sense because it just helps spread our let's call them our fixed costs
base
over a bigger base. Correct, Mike?
Our production will go up when they come in, but we're using some of their resources. We're going to keep using some of their resources, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. And the reality is their current rules and regs don't allow them to irrigate outside, so their usage is very, very low.
That's right. You said that.
Right, so you know, to put it in perspective, I think their total annual usage last year was like 50 acre feet for the whole development. So its usage is small.
Okay.
To help offset some of our fluctuations, we have established these stabilization funds, our bond reserve that we've never had to touch, but is there. The bond companies like to see it. We've got $1.2 million that we never really touch, but it's our insurance for them, more or less. Our treatment plant, we didn't spend any money on carbon or membranes this year, so the funds built back up to $264,000. Next year, we're planning to spend about $120,000 on carbon. Lost Canyon, so this is the fund that Park City and us both put money into. It's at $655,000. There is a big repair coming next year for about $150,000 out of that fund.
So our drought reserve fund isn't one of these?
It, once it's established, we could probably classify it as one of these because it will help stabilize rates and that we wouldn't have to increase a rate on a temporary basis because of a drought is part of the
So that's not going into this year's.
It is. It's just categorically not considered a rate stabilization fund from a definition standpoint.
Yeah, there's no fund in it yet, let's say. But it'll move out of a regionalization reserve fund that isn't specific rate stabilization to probably a rate stable. We can classify it as a rate stabilization fund.
You know, the regionalization reserve is another example where, you know, in theory it can be applied as a rate stabilization fund as well, right? So I
liked the idea that you were taking it from that fund instead of creating another one. I just, yeah. You know, I just feel like all these different funds and reserves, you know, I mean, I know they all serve a purpose, but, you know, it becomes harder and harder to to justify having these giant
bank
balances.
I'm still curious about how you're going to apply that to something, but I guess you're going to get to the point where if you fall below 250 days, you're going to go to that fund to prop it up to 250 days?
If we're having a revenue shortfall because people aren't using as much, yeah, we can use that fund to prop up cash, prop up our ratio.
But generally, the $800,000 number comes directly from our drought response plan, where Steve identified at those reduction levels, drought level 3, 4, and 5, which is increasing reductions. I think, Steve, you had in there a 20% of the revenue shortfall, if it were to exist, Tim, 20% of the revenue shortfall as modeled would be taken care of by this drought reserve fund. And at that worst case scenario, 20% of the worst case scenario was $800,000.
Yeah.
So that's where this comes
from.
That's
where that $800,000 comes from. And we'll talk about that a little bit because it is part of the three-pronged approach or whatever. So it basically kind of puts in a fund we can't really touch, like don't spend this. But then if we're getting that situation, we can move it back into operating reserves. Correct. Debt coverage ratio, we'll hit this a little bit more later, but just to kind of show the history, 2019, 2020, we're both over 2. 2021, we're going to be about 2.5. And that's because of the impact fees. Because we can add those into our ratio. For 2022, we're budgeting 1.67.
That's a big change.
You know, we really try to target 1.35 to 1.5. So the fact we've been so high, it's been good because it's generated reserves for us. But we don't really want to we don't want to budget that high.
Well, then it looks like our rates are too high.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
So does this take us to having to do a rate increase?
No. See, because the kind of, what I talked about before, so let's say 2019 we had this $9.5 million. We could have never budgeted to have that much in retail water sales up here. So that made that ratio high. Because we always budget right around 1.6, let's say. And then this year it's this $3.15 million in impact fees that's driving it high. So in kind of a normal year, we should hit this. And that should just put off enough money for our capital projects, not build in reserve, just kind of be like, we're just maintaining. The fact that we have this is good because the projects we do have coming up because of the growth.
Right, we gotta follow through.
Yeah, like we would have never
collected that money, and it really can't go to offset rates.
That's correct on the impact fee side, correct.
Yeah, so that can't, because the 1.25 has to be met every year. Mm-hmm. So even if we increased rates right now, it'd just be putting more money in the coffers. So we almost have to wait until expenses are getting to the point where we have to increase rate to get to the 1.25.
The district's goal of 1.35, right? If we get below that, that's when rate increases become a discussion.
Okay.
In 2022, we're going to do an impact fee facility plan, redo our impact fee, and do a rate study. Because we got enough moving parts to kind of rebuild that schedule out with the growth we've had.
What was the basis for the 1.35? Where did that come from?
If I remember right, that's an administrative policy, and that was set many years ago, and I think the theory is that 1.25 is required per our bond covenants, and they wanted to have a little cushion.
Yeah,
yeah,
to be a little
that
bit
sounds
better
exactly
than that.
Like okay. I remember.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's more cash stuff in the packet. This is the one slide or one talking about our unrestricted cash, because this is cash that really we can spend on any legitimate district purpose. Where you can see they fought the 120-day policy minimum. We've grown that quite a bit. This should start to come down as we start to go through things, but it's not bad to be averaging over 300 days. As we've listened into some of these conferences and webinars during the COVID, water companies that didn't have that on hand could be hurting. So having this in reserves has been good, but yeah, this is just the stuff we can spend. All our other money is really tied to debt payments or their customer deposits. We're going to have to refund to them as soon as they connect, you know, repair and replace funds that we're committed to.
Impact fees.
Yeah, impact fees is a big balance.
And I think something Steve mentioned a minute ago that we need to keep in mind, and we'll remind council as well, is that cash balances are very healthy at the moment, which we've been fortunate. B, it's a good thing because we've got two fairly large capital project expenses coming up. We've got the district office that is not impact fee eligible, so unrestricted cash would be used towards that. And then we've got the expansion of the water treatment plant, which will be impact fee eligible after we update our impact fee
100%
study.
100% eligible?
That'll be part of the impact fee study. I believe that the majority of the costs will be impact fee eligible because they're going to serve new growth, right? The expansion.
You mean like 75%, 80%, or?
Yeah, I think 75 is a conservative number. I think it'll be higher than that.
Yeah. Because we can meet current
demand. I mean, it
makes
sense, right, that you wouldn't need an expansion unless you had growth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So this, in your section, our personnel and compensation, so there are three additional FTEs for 2022 that we're building into the budget, really to handle the growth of the district and our customers. One will be a customer service specialist helping in the office. With Anna, all the impact fees, title transfers, additional phone calls. We've added since 2018, we've added about 1,000 water using customers and about 400 standby customers without really adding anybody to help them handle that. So that's that position. The customer service operator, as I kind of explained to Karen in a couple of emails we've exchanged, is really we've been borrowing somebody from distribution to help install meters and do customer service calls. This is really to put somebody along with John O'Brien, who's part of public service, get him the help he needs. And so the distribution person can go back over. Then the transmission department operator to help with the Lost Canyon and the PRVs and kind of throughout the district make sure our transmission system's working well. The recommended pay increases we've built into the budget is a 7% COLA. We didn't do a mid-year 2021 COLA. The county did. So that's why it's particularly big. But if you've been seeing any of your financial inflationary reports or COLA for Social Security even, you know that that's a very reasonable COLA.
5.8.
I even heard 5.9. So yeah. And then a 3% average merit. And then we're keeping 1% back to tie to that new TrackStar program about evaluating job performance. That will just be paid out on a quarterly bonus program, as I understand.
It's
be managed by Scott.
It's the opportunity to have additional spot bonuses that are tied to performance that's directly tied to this new software tool that's being rolled out by the county and by us. A little further dialogue on the requested pay increases. This paces well with what the county is doing, which is what the council typically likes to see and typically looks for. So the county did a 4% mid-year COLA this year, and they're requesting a 4% COLA going into next year, so a total of 8. And they're asking for a 3% average merit. So you can see, you know, our 7% COLA, 1% tied to performance, and then the 3% merit, again, paces well with what the county's doing.
Didn't they stay level for all of 2020?
They did, so that's a further nuance, Tim. It's a good pickup. Mountain Regional did a 1% COLA, last year. So a 1% COLA and a 2% average merit is what we did last year.
And they were level at the county.
And they were level. So, you know, essentially, if we think that through, right, if we take the last 2 years, it's a 7. We're asking for 7% this year, and we had 1% last year. That's a total of an 8% COLA. Combined at merit for last year and this year would be the 2% from last year, the 3% from this year, which is 5%. The county would be at 3% because they did 0 last year and they're doing 3% this year. And the county does not have this 1% hold aside for these spot bonuses that I talked about. So
on an apples-to-apples comparison over a 2-year period of time, are you saying that this gets it back on par with where the county's going, or is it, I mean, it would seem to me that we're still ahead of them.
If we ignore the time value of money, where we'd be ahead of them by 2% mm-hmm. in merit and this additional 1% in performance incentives.
The one thing about the 1% to remember is it's a bonus, so it's not built into. It doesn't build on.
It's not guaranteed. It doesn't compound.
It doesn't become.
Doesn't become part of their salary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the annual bonus for 2022, $1,500, consistent with 2021, which you approved back in 2020.
But you didn't issue any last year, right?
No.
No, we had the regular bonus last year, but remember we agreed that this year they were going to get the higher bonus.
Right, budget the $1,000 last year, but not the $1,500, even though you could have.
Yeah. Yeah. So the November board meeting, there will be a agenda item to consider approval of a year-end bonus for this year.
Okay.
Up to that $1,500.
Do we feel like we're having any turnover or any issues with people, you know, jumping ship for more money? Or?
We're not. That's something that, you know, I expect the council to potentially ask as well. I think there's two metrics that they may ask about in relation to this. One is, are we having trouble hiring? Two is, aren't we having any turnover? The answer to both of those questions is no. The most recent hire we did was in distribution. We were able to get a candidate to fill that position. It was an entry level position. And with respect to attrition or turnover, we don't have any.
Great.
Well, I feel like we've followed this responsibly over the last 2-3 years. And if someone's saying it's not working because you're not having any turnover, I think that was the whole idea, is to try to get ahead of it so that you wouldn't have any turnover. And I think that you can make an argument that it's kind of hard to measure, but it's successful. Now, at some point, you know, if we'd done double what we've done, then we wouldn't have had any turnover here, and we could say that was successful too, and that's going to be their argument. How do you know you haven't gone too far?
Yep. Lisa, do you have a point or a question?
No, I was just going to say the same thing that Tim just said. I think that one of the reasons we Mountain Regional has been able to retain the employees that we have is because we have stayed out ahead of it. The county has not, and they've been behind the ball on this. And, you know, we used to get the ding for being too generous to our employees, where now we're not scrambling to try to find employees. We're at a pace that, you know, we're seeing we need to kick it up a bit. And I would say we're going to need to do 3 hires. We've had to hire one person really the beginning of the year. We just hired somebody, like Scott mentioned, recently. But we need 3 new hires, and we're going to need to be at a pay scale that's consistent and comparable to other entities. So we do take a lot of, we have done a lot of research in the past to make sure that we're competitive with Park City and sewer districts and other entities, so that we put ourselves in a good position, and we continue to do that. I just subscribed to a Wasatch and back compensation survey software, where we can compare against other entities in our area, as well as other organizations our size across the country, really. So we're continuing to watch this, and I think these numbers, like Scott mentioned and Steve mentioned, agree with where the county's at. So I think we're in a good position.
Great.
Any further questions on that?
All right. Going back, kind of, we do have one talking about that drought reserve fund specifically in the budget, as that it was established in a part of our administrative policy update. We'll transfer $800,000 into the regionalization reserve fund from our current, $800,000 into it from the regionalization reserve fund that currently has a balance of $2.7 million. And then it's just part of our three-pronged approach to address revenue shortfall, where we cut expenses, drought surcharges, and drought reserve. The drought reserve is probably most valuable between expense reductions and before we have to start drought surcharges. Like, we can kind of step that in there as part of the plan so that we don't have to roll out something to our customers. You've helped us build the little pad, you know, so we'll use that before we have to actually change rates to anybody.
Bullet number two on there, the drought surcharges.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen whether that's going to have any effect on reduced water usage.
Yeah.
Correct. Obviously, a lot of unknowns related to the elements of the drought response plan and how it functions in reality.
Yeah, and how much of the surcharge is base and how much is to usage rates. There's a couple of different levers we can pull in there. Okay, so now we've kind of gone through where we're at. Let's talk about what this spit out for the budget for 2022. Operating revenue, there is a small decrease, about $120,000, about 1%. And that's because the sales through Weber Basin are $723,000 less. But we're making up through that for retail sales increase of $423,000, and operating fees increase there. So we end up with about, you know, a little less than we'd had before, but about the same, even though we're having this big drop. We had originally, like I said, back in 2018, 2019, thought this drop would be much more painful than it's turning out to be. So that's the operating revenue forecast for 2022 budget. Non-operating revenue, taken down the interest earnings. I didn't take them down enough last year. I learned my lesson, so I took them down this year. So the interest earnings is dropped down to something that we should be able to achieve. You'll see the increase. We'd only budgeted $600,000 last year for impact fees, which I've paid the price for all year this year. So we did increase that by $1 million to 1.6 for this coming year.
Do you have a trend on the impact fees? Are they still holding about the same every month?
They do kind of match historical trends month to month. It's just that every number's...
We had a discussion this morning.
They're still strong.
Yeah.
They're slowing down a little bit, but they always slow down in October.
But compared against previous years, to your point, Mike, I bet they would show that even though they're slowing down, they're still very strong compared to previous years.
Okay, thank you.
But with the six-fold increase on there, I mean, what about the processing on your end?
Oh, that's where Anna's...
Why they're adding...
Yeah, Anna and Mike and Chris from their department, getting the plans in, getting it turned around, getting it back to people, it's like they never stop, you know, doing that, really. Kind of as a side note, a highlight of that, in September, we had more impact fees in September this year than we had January to September in 2020.
Wow.
It followed me, yeah. I think it was like 650,000 this September through January through September 2020. We were at 550.
So what if we weren't to process those in a timely manner? What would be the repercussions of that?
It holds up building permits.
Okay.
Yeah. So they get calls as soon as it's a day.
Somebody gets called.
Yeah. Somebody gets called as soon as it's a day later than they think it should have been.
Okay.
So.
But we were able to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good story.
Yes. I should turn the floor over to Anna and Chris and Mike for like 5 minutes.
Yes. Well, no, let's keep going. Let's get through this.
Okay, we'll get through this.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Operating expenses with the personnel increases, the inflationary pressures we're seeing on materials and services,
The wage increases we talked about, there's a large, about $150,000 valve replacement needed at Lost Canyon. And then distribution, just the meters we buy to install, we expense those. So those really drive the expense budget up quite a bit in 2022. But we've been over this numerous times, and I think finally feel kind of comfortable with where these are. We can manage it, but it gets us where we need to be. Non-operating expenses, so this is the interest on the loans and things. Decreases again this year versus last year, partially because of the refinancing and also because of that debt we paid off earlier this year. So that helps drop the interest expense for next year. Debt service budget. So when you plug this all in, what does it spit out? All the accounting up top, but basically we end up with a ratio of 1.58 for all of our debt. That includes all the parity debt, all the bonds, plus our debt to Weber Basin for projects at Lost Canyon and stuff like that. If we only look at the parity debt, which is kind of that key 1.25, we are at the 1.67. So after we cover all our expenses, what does this tell us? It kicks out just over $2 million of that. By policy, we have to put 5% of our budget operating expenses in a reserve for future capital projects. That's the $433,000, and it will leave us about $1.6 million at the end of the year for capital projects in 2023. So that's where we get our money for capital projects. So that's...
For 2023 projects.
Yeah, for 2023. What we generate in 2022, we can use in 2023.
Have you ever showed us a graph of our debt over time?
I don't think we have ever put that together.
I'd be interested in that, just seeing where we are. I mean, it seems like we haven't been taking on excessive debt.
It's always a factor that bodes well for us when we do our bond rating, because our debt has stayed very stable.
Yep.
But they look at how your debt is spread over how many customers you have. So we keep adding customers and not adding debt.
But didn't we have a big payment coming up, or did we just...
We kind of... With Zions Public Finance, they help kind of smooth any bumps, okay, so that, yeah, you don't have a big year.
But that's what I recall, was there from that curve, there was a big...
What we did is we had a big drop when the first assessment with Promontory dropped. Mm-hmm. So we went from about $3.5 million a year down to about 2.8 or 2.9 per year, but we also didn't have as much revenue coming that Promontory had to pay us, because that bond had gone away. Then the next year, it kicked back up to the kind of the standard 3.5 million.
There was a big regionalization fee that kicked in a couple of years ago. That may be what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And we've weathered that storm.
Okay, we absorbed that.
That's a pretty significant financial number on there, and I think that the problem with conveying it that way, of a 1.58 versus a 1.25, you should really be comparing 0.58 to 0.25. It's more than double of it, right? That would be the reserves over.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, capital budget for 2022. The column to really focus on is the highlighted column in pink or rose. The other stuff is kind of everything that was approved. There's still some question on what will be completed, what might roll over. The pink is the new ask. We'll be able to fund it all through cash reserves, through impact fees. No need to borrow or bond or anything for what we've got planned for this year. The biggest project is the Summit Park tank. We've been doing a lot of preliminary design work on this. This is actually to get it constructed in 2022. Pipeline replacement, most of that is in Summit Park. That is in Summit Park, let me say. 8-inch line, and I forget the number of feet that Sam told me to come up with that number. The solar array, the engineering fees here, the $325,000, that's for the Signal Hill Treatment Plant expansion through Jacobs.
You'll see that next month in the board packet.
And then kind of South Point distribution, this is Promontory for their new development that way. If we decide to expand our line there to get more capacity out that way, our typical vehicles and equipment, a couple hundred thousand dollars for trucks, and they want to get a forklift for the treatment plant. Spine Road Electrical, which is much like the Kilby Road Electrical that we're doing, that we started this year, that we're going to finish next year, about getting the power up out of the ground. Karen, I think your question...
Yeah, my question was why would you want it... Like, it seems like the ideal situation is to have your power underground, so I didn't understand why we were moving
it. It's a safety concern because it's a wet environment. We're trying to get the power cabinets up out of that environment.
So it's like it's not power lines.
No,
it's going to be like power in a... I don't know.
Yeah, so it's all the electrical mechanical stuff that makes the booster station run. And what happens is that currently it's down on the floor and it's moist and wet down there and it's flooded before. So
gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
The 110 you're allocating adjustment rule system improvements for this next year is the groundwater study with Laughlin for $40,000, $20,000 for the conveyance line out of Promontory to make sure we can get all that water treatment plant's going to be producing to the district, and $50,000 for Silver Springs pump to get more water out of those wells we've kind of reactivated this year. So those are the general system improvements, new general system improvements that are being asked for this year. So we did have some savings last year. The Kilby water line, which we've discussed, came in under budget by a couple hundred thousand dollars. So we've been able to reallocate part of that to the equipment we needed for the security system to improve our IT environment. And then the Silver Creek storage yard, which we budgeted $443,000 for, but as the office plan came together, it realized it'd be better to save that money and be able to use that in the future on other capital projects, not spend the money out there because we're going to spend it over on the cap at the new office. So that's the capital budget. So an ask of 3.73, but fully funded through the funds we have. Any questions?
I act
like I know about all this, but this is really Scott's stuff.
Do we have anything in there for that, like, that area by the canyons that had the groundwater and the, gosh, I'm not.
Our spring.
Yeah.
Got impacted.
Yeah.
No, there's no capital. There's not a capital project aligned with that for next year. We did the upgrades we needed to do to be able to use that on an interim basis. That sunsets in September 2022. We will no longer be able to use that source. We're in the process of doing some studies on whether or not we want to consider treating that source there on site, or whether or not we want to let that water flow all the way to East Canyon Creek on the other, on the north side of I-80 and grab it at Weaver Basin's water treatment plant. I think my gut feeling at the moment is that it makes more sense to treat it on site. It's politically, or maybe not politically, it's challenging because that's a shared source. Summit Water actually owns 70% of the capacity of that source in the summer. So we're going to get done with these preliminary studies, and I'm going to be looking for some level of leadership from Summit Water on, you know, what are they interested in doing. And the reality from a district perspective is that I don't believe that we need this source for the near term. And so, you know, I think we can focus on the treatment plant capacity upgrades. There may be some interim. If we get into a pinch, we could get a temporary treatment skid there on site to be able to get through a season as we're waiting for the treatment plant to get finished. But, you know, we're, you know, long story short, we're focusing on the treatment plant at the moment and putting our resources there.
Okay.
It's not a huge source. It's what, a couple 100 acre feet a year?
300 acre feet a year is what we've been using. We could probably get a little bit more out of it related to some of the upgrades in Silver Springs that Steve mentioned. You know, from a peak day capacity standpoint, it's, you know, a couple hundred gallons a minute in July, so it's not huge.
Okay. So Section 7 is the amendments that we will need to make to the budget.
Hold on 1 second.
Oh,
Steve.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add something to the capital projects discussion. As Scott was talking about the Spring Creek Spring, we have applied for ARPA funding for that spring in conjunction with Summit Water. They wrote us a recommendation letter All the ARPA funding that is currently available through the state is being reviewed next week. I didn't have a good sense of whether or not we were going to qualify for any of the 5 projects that we submitted, so we have not showed any grant funding on this table. We will know before we go, not before we go to council for the tentative budget, but we will know if we've been awarded any funds by mid-November, at which time we could update this table. So that's still a possibility that's kind of hanging out there. I've also had some discussions and been in meetings with the water resources community in Utah, and they also have some ARPA funds that could be available to us. And Spring Creek Spring might be a great example of trying to leverage some funds for multiple entities, which is what they're kind of trying to get their best bang for their buck. So that's another thing we might just to consider and keep in your mind as we go forward with this. There may be some grant funding that's available for those projects and others, and I'll keep you updated as soon as I hear it.
Great. Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa.
So the amendments, as we've hit before, the $50,000 were short in retail water sales we've made in operating fees, which basically is meter fees and things like that. Then on the expense side, we don't have to, we had distribution went over, kind of your question about we had to buy some more meters than we'd planned. And so we're taking that. We've had some savings in treatment plants. So net zero is just which department
so
is classified.
I didn't understand that, but there's a projection to adopt. Did that 184 when that's what we're going, that's your how much we're needing?
No, the we're just basically moving the 50. What this is saying is we're coming up short here, but we made it back. We're a little over here, you know, and over here. So that's
right. But the bottom down the with that 184,500.
Yeah, that's basically how much better we're amending the budget. That is better by $185,000 because we're making more in operating fees than we lost in other areas.
It's projection at year end compared against the 2021 budget that was adopted last year.
So it's really this line.
184 better, right?
To the good. Yeah,
yeah, 184,000 to the good. And in the pink column to the left, Steve's just moving some money between departments to cover shorts.
Right. So we thought our budget was 12.1. We were projecting 12.3. There's 200 or 184.
To the good.
That's,
and that's just operating revenue. So this doesn't show the impact fees.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
So the non-operating budget... So this is revenue that, like impact fees and such. So, for example, here, Mike, where we budgeted $600,000, we're projecting 3.1, so we're to the good, $2.5 million. What happened is I'd over-budgeted for interest earnings, so we just have to make that up through these other cash non-operating revenue, which we've had more than we thought we would. That's like inspection fees, our 3% inspection fees for new projects. And part of the money we received from Park City for the loan payment ended up having to go to this category. So, Mike, look, we made it to the summary slide.
All right.
All right.
So go back. I still don't understand the amendment entirely.
The amendment is just trying to keep everything even. It's just
internal.
Yeah.
But we're not going back to the county to amend the budget.
No, we'll tell them about it, but it's more of a courtesy, like, you know, we don't have to ask for more money. It just wasn't maybe right in all the right categories.
But it's a formal amendment that they have to approve.
It's more of a cleanup.
It's a cleanup.
Yeah, it's a kind of a cleanup.
It all works out in the wash.
Yeah.
But we still have to do this amendment.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a typical process
amendment.
For us. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I got it.
There's been a few.
And it's.
Who?
It's a zero.
It's a net zero.
Increase.
Yeah.
It's just a accounting and cleanup and balancing. Yeah. Okay, that's good. I thought we were asking for.
No, we're not asking for anything else.
But is it? It's formally changing the budgeted amount for 2021.
Yeah.
So when you put in 2021 against the 2022, it'll have that amended budget shown in there instead of something that's kind of
correct.
Right.
So I go back into our accounting software and make these changes in it to change what the budget is.
Okay.
So summary, strong revenue from 2021 from record amount of impact fees. The debt ratio projected high. Our 2022 budget is very similar to all our budgets. Fortunately, the inflationary expense increases, we can cover those through customer growth despite the decreasing regional water supply sales. Strong cash position, but lots of capital plans, treatment plant expansion, office, things like that to spend down those reserves. The drought reserve fund, I think, is a good forethought that we put that together early this year and now can fund it, have the funds for that. So I think that's a nice piece. And then that no rate increase needed due to customer growth. If we hadn't had the growth, this would have been probably a typical year we would have been asking for one. But due to that, we don't need to. So that's always a nice message to be able to send our customers in the county. So.
Yeah. All great right. work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that.
It's really well done.
I know it's a labor of love.
Yes. Well, and there's lots of hands that help make the pie.
Well, you guys have really gone in to understand the data.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there are no other questions.
Well, is this a presentation that you're going to be giving to the council?
Yes, pretty much.
I suggest on slide 12.
Okay.
That you get a little more contrast between those very important matters on each of those stacked bars.
Well, the top one was kind of hard to see. That was.
Yeah. Oh, like the production slide. This one? Is this 12?
Yeah, I'd suggest that you get something that's easier to digest.
Okay.
From a color perspective, so they stand out.
Just put in some different colors and stuff instead of the patterns, because the patterns don't translate very well when you take them from a big size into this and then put it down into the little box to show what the legend is.
Okay.
Just for whatever.
No, that's good, because, yeah, especially when the legend's so small compared to, it's hard to.
But you can pick a color up pretty easily, but the pattern, no.
No, okay. Any other thoughts? Because, yeah, this is pretty. We changed a couple of slides at the beginning. We don't have to tell them why we're there. They kind of know. But any other thoughts on the presentation for the county? All right.
Thanks to Steve for his hard work, to Lisa for her detailed oversight, and for both of them for putting up with me over the last couple of months. We will need a motion of approval. A motion to recommend.
The tentative budget to council. Yep.
I will make a motion to recommend the tentative budget to council.
And second.
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Let's pull the agenda up. It'll help you with getting the motion right. We got to get the amended budget in there as well.
Oh.
So there you go. Consideration for recommendation. So
Motion of approval to recommend the 2022 tentative budget and 2021 proposed amended budget to the district's governing board.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
That's Ian. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Nicely done, you guys. Item C here on financial, maybe looking at.
Yeah, you only thought we were
keep going, Steve.
From
that big of
Wells Fargo to Zion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Zion's, I mean, with Wells Fargo, we keep on kind of getting transferred to a different manager, and they're never in state. Plus, their credit card upgrade ended up being a real credit card downgrade, let's say, to the reporting process involved. So as I started to talk to our public finance people, I asked, is there somebody you'd recommend on the other side? And he said, oh, and I got the same name from two people, because Zions Bank has a division that works just with special service districts, counties, and cities. That's all they do.
Great.
And so I talked to them. We could save about $75 to $100 a month on bank fees, plus we'll make about $2,500 a year on credit card rewards that right now through Wells Fargo we made nothing. Plus it helps, you know, the specialized support, local support will be nice, and plus the synergy of kind of working with Zion Public Finance I think will be helpful. We're already transferring money to them out of Wells every month for bond payments and things. So
okay.
Is this going to make your job easier?
It'll make it harder for about a month, and then it should make it easier.
I'm for it then.
Okay.
All right. So we need a motion for this, or is...
No.
Nope.
This is just an FYI discussion.
I'm sure you don't have any concerns.
No concerns.
$2,500 go to the general fund?
Yeah. You can tell they've worked with special service districts. We're like, we'll just give that back into your credit, your account. We're not giving you gift cards or anything that could be mishandled.
Yeah.
It's a deposit back into our checking account.
Anything in other, Steve? Any other topics?
I sure hope not.
Okay. So Sam Grenley's up next on item 5 to... consider approving a contract with Aqua Engineering for a Summit Park water tank.
Right, so we have an engineering design service contract up for approval this month, and it's relating to our largest capital publicly bidded project for this coming year, which is the Summit Park Tank 1. Summit Park Tank 1 serves the lowest elevation tank in Summit Park, and it also serves the largest area in the neighborhood, which includes the new Discovery development that has been built and is currently coming online to the district. And it's undersized at around 100,000 gallons in above-ground steel storage tank. And it's become undersized mainly just due to continued growth in the district over the years. So at a minimum, what we want to try and do is size the storage facility to hold an equivalent water volume that equates to the average daily use in that tank's service area. And when we look at the build-out conditions and the demands we're currently seeing in the area, we need to upsize to a 250,000 gallon tank. So that's a significant upsize. Also, as part of this project, we're looking to add a chlorination and tank mixing facility. And we've had a lot of success with a similar approach with our Spring Creek project that we installed at the spring tank. And we think this will be another good application and will stabilize chlorine residuals throughout Summit Park and that area of the district.
Hey, Sam.
Go ahead.
On the volume of 250,000 gallons, is any of that fire flow, would that be a benefit there?
That's a good question. So, given the size constraints, it is not feasible, we don't think, to have fire flow located in the lowest part of Summit Park. However, the Summit Park Tank 3, the highest elevation tank, is oversized for the area. I believe it's 700,000 gallons. So that's where we plan to have our fire flow storage for the entire Summit Park neighborhood.
That makes sense.
Summit Park Tank 2 and 1 at lower elevations will primarily just be equalization storage.
And Tank 3, that's the underground one.
Correct.
Above the Parkview Trail.
Yep.
Where's this tank located?
It's on Crestview Drive, right as you come up the, get up and over the steep part of Crestview on the right.
And it's really close to some houses.
Yep, correct.
Which is why I saw there they potentially have some decorative outside concepts.
Sam will touch on that. We've been discussing trying to minimize the impact in the neighborhood.
Do the neighbors on either side know?
Not yet.
Okay.
It'll be part of the conditional use permit process, and I'm stealing Sam's thunder. So, Sam, take it away.
Sorry, Sam.
This is going to be a tough project.
That's a perfect segue, Ian.
Which facts
Ian's good at those tonight, if you haven't noticed.
Significant part of the scope of the project is going to be going through the conditional use permitting process with the county. And we baked that into the design fee with Aqua. We're going to have renderings to show the county. We've already been kind of looking at finish ideas for the tank to improve aesthetics, which we really think we can do. And there'll also probably be some low-impact tree planting and landscaping to try and help spur things along through the public comment period.
Is that tank going to be between the road and the existing tank?
So that's the project in the nutshell. And then the timeline is, we'd like to start on the field work immediately, again, if the board approves, with survey and geotech happening this year. And that gives us about a 3 or 4 month design period and bidding at the end of the first quarter in 2022, which we think will give us is an advantageous period, time to put the project out and hopefully get good project pricing.
So Tim had a question about construction and where the new tank was going to go. Do you want to touch on the process of eliminating the old tank?
Yeah, so we looked at a couple preliminary options, adding an additional tank onto the existing site. So we have two above ground soil tanks and a number of others. But we think really to get the volume we need long term on the site, we have to demo the existing tank and likely put an above ground concrete tank to make the most of our available footprint. And we can accomplish that through the construction period kind of through two methods. One is we have a good source in Summit Park that can really meet most of the average day demands in the area, Summit Park Bowl 7. And the second piece is we have an emergency connection with Gorgoza Water. And we've been in discussions with those folks about potentially being able to feed water through this back-end emergency connection to get us through the construction period. So we're still kind of finalizing the details on that, but that's the preliminary thought process.
Did we look into a quote of a below-grade tank, or was there an issue with the existing line so we couldn't do that?
So the issue is going with a conventional buried concrete storage tank, which would be a good option, is the hydraulic grade, the hydraulics in the area. Summit Park is extremely sensitive to the hydraulic grade in the tanks, where we have some connections that have very low pressures already, to the point where even lowering the tank and the water surface elevation inside tank by 10 feet would probably have some significant impact on some homes in the area. Okay. So we just, given the nature of the Center Park system, we just don't have the flexibility to change water surface elevation at this tank location.
Are we going to reach out to those two homeowners before we start any work?
Yeah, so Sam and I talked about that briefly today. We talked to as part of the engineering, you know, sort of kickoff of this with the greater team, as part of the conditional use permit, there's a public notice process to people that live within a specific radius of that. So Sam and I talked about, you know, potentially working with Aqua to have nice packet materials put together to deliver to each of those homes as part of that process. If we think that we need to get out ahead of it, you know, prior to that, so that they essentially have two notices, one a courtesy and two as part of a defined public process, then that's an option as well.
Because the home to the west, I believe that's the Stices.
His daughter owns it now.
It's not the Stices.
Oh, it's the daughter?
Yeah.
Okay. At some point, there was a concern about that tank that's been expressed, so
yeah.
It might be worth just trying to...
There was a boundary line agreement that was done back in 2015-ish, 2016-ish, that Stice had was concerned about where the boundary line was between his house and the tank,
yep.
And Andy had signed a boundary line agreement relative to what was found on the ground at the time.
Okay.
I think it'd be a good idea to go just talk to those two and let them know there'll be something more formal coming. I don't think you can go wrong there.
Because there's also been some conflicts with the adjacent lots and people using them, and so it might be worth just having some conversations.
Okay, that's good feedback. So what we can do is we can find out what the radius is for the formal public process and make sure that we get in touch with those folks before that process begins.
Or I think it's just those two neighbors.
Those are the critical ones, yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
You want to go ahead the town and live.
I mean, you probably obviously have to follow the process for all of them, but I think those two might be good to do a little extra hand-holding.
Yep, sounds good.
I don't see how it's going to work with putting a bigger tank
So there used to be another round tank in front of that one originally.
Yeah.
And
what? But if there's a setback from the front and the sides, it looks like that 100,000 gallon. I don't see how you're gonna. It's doubled around, or
it's going to be taller.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Well, they're going to make it out of concrete, and probably an irregular shape.
Yes, exactly. It's not as it's.
Yep. So Aqua's looked.
Tank. Aqua's it's not an looked off at, the shelf one.
Yeah, Aqua's looked at some different options with the setbacks in place.
Okay.
To make sure that.
No, I mean, it's basically is yeah, a helpful
it's,
word.
It's potentially thank yeah, you. It's going to be yeah, not a circular. Dimension, it's going to be, you know, an atypical shape that kind of follows the boundary of the property with the setbacks to get the volume that we need.
Okay.
Can we say pie piece?
And then we're stealing Sam's thunder because yeah. Sam was going to tell us about what they're going to do on the outside of the tank.
Yeah, so back to you, Sam.
Oh, yeah, sure. Just for additional aesthetics improvements. And I mean, nothing's finalized, but if we thought about doing some sort of board form concrete, maybe some sort of acid treatment even, and kind of give it a rustic kind of wood finish look. But again, once we'll get further along with the rendering and be able to provide those to the county and to the board.
Very good.
Cool. Any further questions for Sam?
No. Good job, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
So, do we need a motion to approve the contract?
Yes, a motion to approve the engineering design services contract with Aqua Engineering for the design and construction management of the Summit Park Tank 1.
There's a second?
Second.
Is Karen. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
That was unanimous. Thanks, Sam. Item 6. Scott Morrison with general manager comments.
All right, sounds good, Mike. I'm going to try to tell you this. I know we're starting to run pretty late tonight. With respect to the questions and comments, recommendations on capital budget reporting and capital project reporting, Sam and I had lunch with Tim. Mike, you and I talked on the phone about some ideas. And we have improvements to that reporting process that you're going to see rolling out in November. Sam's going to do an update on all the projects that we did for 2021 as a recap. In January of 2022, Sam will do a preview of all the projects that you're going to see in 2022. We've talked about with Tim a couple different reporting approaches for those projects that are greater than what we arrived at, Tim, was 5% of the operating budget. Those projects, you'll see some additional higher level reporting, more detailed reporting.
That'd be like at 150 to 200,000 minimum? Is that what that?
5% would be 430K.
Okay.
So anything over
that.
So
you won't be reporting on that manner on projects smaller than that?
Correct, yeah. For projects smaller than that, we'll provide more of a summarized Gantt or bar chart type table that just kind of shows all the projects, when the performance periods are, how we're doing, some basic metrics that you can digest. So again, recap in November for 2021, preview in January for 2022. Steve is going to continue to provide financial updates for capital projects in his financial report. He may change his form up a little bit. There's going to be some, I don't want to say repetitive, but redundancy in that information.
That's what's on page 8, right? That report on there?
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
Yes, because that's a financial report.
Yep. Yeah. The financial report would be much more simplified, maybe a better snapshot without having
to. I went and took a look at that after Lisa said it's in that report every week.
Yeah. And so if the board decides, you know, we don't need both of those sources, we can talk about that later, but that's the path forward. Good news, the Division of Water Rights granted approval on that replacement exchange application that allows the district to divert an additional 700 acre feet of water through the Lost Canyon system.
That's a really big deal.
This is a huge deal. it provides much greater flexibility for water resource production within the district. It would fully allocate the district's portion of the Lost Canyon system with paper rights that are unlikely to be diverted from other groundwater sources. And, you know, if I take the current rate or the current cost of a 1 acre foot exchange with Weber Basin today, I think it's got an annual value of about $315,000 to the district. So it's a big deal. The Weber River Watershed Coalition, that's related to the questions with Utah State earlier. Good news on that front as well. If you recall, we applied to for a grant. It was the Innovative Finance and National Forest Grant. That grant was awarded $295,000 that will allow the county to hire a public lands coordinator, which they've done with Jessica Kirby. And it will, you know, essentially the purpose of the grant is to allow for the discovery of what a financing program would look like to finance forests health work to avoid a catastrophic wildfire in the upper Weber watershed. You know, the reality is that there are a number of stakeholders into that, Mountain Regional being certainly one of them. But Weber Basin, obviously the largest water stakeholder for the Weber watershed, right? They serve 700,000 people out of the Weber watershed. All the communities that are served downstream, you've got Davis County. Summit Counties is certainly a stakeholder. Other water providers in Park City that benefit from the Lost Canyon system. So, you know, I think, long story short, over the next 2 years, there's going to be a lot of work and effort put into trying to identify what is the initial capital investment to forest health projects that are needed. What is the ongoing or recurring maintenance of projects that's needed to maintain a healthy forest to avoid a catastrophic wildfire? And all of the stakeholders will be asked to participate from a financial perspective. We don't know to what level that is yet, but that's the purpose of the grant. Next up, we did a field tour of the Pine Meadows system with Bowen and Collins, a representative from Bowen and Collins. They are performing the engineering evaluation for our annexation process. Sam, Brian, myself, the rep from Bowen and Collins, and a rep from Pine Meadows toured the system. Infrastructure, from my perspective, is largely in good shape. They did almost a whole system, a new installation of almost the entire water system, water mains, between 2006 and 2008. So from that perspective, it's in good shape. As we mentioned earlier, there is very little. The volume of water used in Pine Meadows today is small because they don't allow outdoor watering. As a result, their source production is very small. So to put it into context, their largest source produces about 15 gallons per minute. So their total source production was on the order of 40 gallons a minute or so, I think, current day. So again, infrastructure largely in good shape, very little source. I have some general concerns, operational concerns, with respect to the size of the system, the access to that system. Many of these, it's predominantly dirt roads, single lane roads in most cases. Time of travel from, you know, the different extents of this system is very long.
Water age
potential issues, but I'm thinking more along the lines of response times and, you know, trying to maintain a community level of service in a development that is much more of a, you know, mountain, cabin, rural, whatever term you want to use, is going to be very challenging. So, you know, my point here is that I wrote down is that it stretches our ability to achieve operational focus without designated and co-located personnel. Meaning, you know, Brian and I are in discussions on this, and we'll continue to discuss, but they have historically had an operator who works full-time on site who can respond quickly. You know, we may have to do the same
thing. A full-time operator?
Yep. This is a bit of a different dynamic than the other areas we serve, with the exception of Stagecoach. You could argue that Stagecoach, when it came to Mountain Regional, was in a far more, it was a far greater challenge in that the water system needed to be replaced, first off, and second off, and very limited plowing of the streets in Stagecoach, and that remains today. Pine Meadows, they say, will have about 75% of the roads are plowed in the winter, so I think from that perspective, it's a plus. We've had a lot of dialogue internally, a lot of, you know, sharing of differences of opinion and kind of what it means to the district. I think the key takeaway that I've landed on, for, you know, this is my opinion, is that from a Division of Drinking Water standpoint and from a Summit County standpoint, there is interest in regional water systems like ourselves to minimize or reduce the number of these small neighborhood systems that typically have deficiencies, right? That have level of service challenges, I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. We, by allowing the annexation of these customers into the district, we are helping to solve that problem. I think that it may and will likely require a different operational approach and a different operational way of thinking, possibly a different communication strategy with respect to levels of service, levels of response that we can provide to a community that is very different than a paved, easily accessed community such as Silver Springs or one of the other neighborhoods we serve. So...
And
it makes sense.
Is there any change in the opportunity to potentially bring over their employees that they currently have?
No change there. I think you know, we can further that discussion a little bit later on, but no change.
Okay. It's nice to maximize that knowledge base that's there if we could somehow.
One concept that we talked about following this site visit was Sam brought up the idea that, which I really like, is there an opportunity to at least retain that employee from a on a contract basis.
Sweet.
Right, for 12 months or whatever the period is that we think is prudent, and pair up an operator or two on our side with that employee to become the subject matter expert for that area to pass along that knowledge.
Yeah.
How does that person go on vacation?
That's a good question.
They previously had two operators.
Yeah.
So is that development up there the type of development that it is because they're only generating 40 gallons, you say, a minute? Is that the reason that they just have little cabins, or is that...
No, if we
improved on that, does that mean that it opens the door for different types of houses that might go up there?
I think that there's an element to that. I think that there's some, you know, rules with respect to how they're allowed to use water that may have prohibited larger homes. But having said that, there's some of the newer homes up there are large. You know, I think the operator from that water system said, I think 6,000 square feet or so are some of the new homes they're seeing up there. So
it's the new teardown neighborhood.
Yeah.
People are buying lots and tearing down the cabins because it's the only affordable ground in the area.
Yeah. So will it change? It may, Tim. I think the reason that it is what it is more because that's how it started and that's what the folks that live up there like and want, right? So... Okay. Any questions on that? No. I attended the ribbon cutting for the large solar array that's to the west of Tooele this week. That's the solar array that that Tim was asking about the additional power costs earlier. Reminder, that's the array that will allow Summit County's government operations to move to nearly 100% renewable electrical power starting in 2023. Other stakeholders are Park City, Vail Resorts, UVU, Utah Valley University, I believe it is. And there may be others, but those are the big ones that come to mind at the moment. It was largely a press event. Mayor Mendenhall was there, Mayor Bierman was there, Chair Wright from the County Council spoke as well. So it was a good event. I think it was inspiring to what maybe to come.
My sister actually, sent me something that she had gotten on Instagram. She was impressed at how forward thinking Summit County was.
Nice. And then lastly, today is Imagine a Day Without Water. So good opportunity to reflect on that a little bit. Thanks to Lisa, she recorded a public service announcement on KPCW this week that's been airing all week. We're trying to improve our presence from a media perspective.
There's some good links on the website too, good documentary.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Lisa, what was the name of the documentary you wanted to plug for the board?
It's called Brave Blue World, and there's a link on our website. You have to have Netflix in order to watch it, but it's a great just 50-minute documentary. It's got Liam Neeson and Matt Damon and some of the newer initiatives that people are taking in, small rural areas to large urban areas to try to, use water resources efficiently and appropriately to different areas. So it's a cool little documentary. It came out last year during Imagine a Day Without Water 2020.
Okay.
And Anna's a great job posting social media on our Facebook and Instagram pages this week with different tips, different resources that the Imagine a Day Without Water folks and U.S. Water Alliance have provided to us. So thanks, Anna, for doing that.
And that's it for me.
Okay. All right. Item 7. I haven't heard from Dave. Are you on the line?
Nope. Dave's not with us tonight. He mentioned at the last meeting he had a conflict tonight. So.
So item 8, department updates. Should we just start with Ian down there?
I had a question about the Summit Park tank, number 1. Sam already covered that. Thanks, Sam. And then just kudos to Chris on the data recovery. Nice job, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Screw those scammers.
Yeah.
Tim.
I just wanted to know who picked brown for the color for the stain.
Oh, that's a good question, Tim. There was a lot of talk there.
That's it, though.
Yeah. Promontory picked the color.
Oh, did they?
Yep.
Probably the same color as my house. No, I was going to comment on the stain as well because we were just up there before the painting and the pictures looked great.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Karen?
Yeah, no, that was my only comment.
All right. I think that takes us through the questions there. Are there anything else we need to cover?
No further business.
Takes us to item 9 and we'll be adjourned at 8:02.